All right, so check it out. You know how we talk about all the weird stuff they sneak into our food, our air, or even our clothes? Yeah, it turns out most shirts are basically made of plastic. You're sweating in chemicals, man. That's why I switched to Hypernatural. It's wild. They make their fabric from jade stone and crab shells. Yeah, you heard me right. Jade and crab shells. The jade keeps you naturally cool, like literally drops your skin temp down a few degrees. And the crab shell fibers, they fight odor and help your skin stay fresh all day long. So you can wear it longer, wash it less, and not smell like a dirty old gym towel. They use a fancy cotton, mother-of-pearl buttons, and zero junk. No polyester, no chemical dyes, and none of that synthetic garbage. It's clean, it's sustainable, and honestly, it's just cool gear. You can wear it anywhere, the gym, the range, whatever, and it looks legit. Go to hypernatural.com and use my code ZEROSIGNAL at checkout, and you'll get yourself 20% off. And get yourself the cleanest, most comfortable shirt you've ever worn. That's Hypernatural, nature engineered for comfort.
There's a moment in every story where the official narrative stops making sense. And in the Jeffrey Epstein case, that moment came the second the most connected inmate in America somehow died in one place designed to keep him alive. I'm your host, David Green, and this is Zero Signal Shorts, where we pull on the threads you're not supposed to tug. Today, we're going inside Epstein's world, how a college dropout from Brooklyn ended up managing billionaires' money, flying presidents and princes on his jet, and dying in a federal cell surrounded by failed cameras and forged logs. Was it suicide, a quiet green light for a desperate man, or something much darker designed to protect the names orbiting his? That's the question we're going to walk straight into today. If you're new here, tune in every Tuesday at 6 a.m. for our deep dive episodes, long-form breakdowns of crimes, cover-ups, and conspiracies the mainstream would rather write off as nothing to see. For now, settle in, turn up the volume, and let's step into the file the feds never wanted us to open. The rise, the wealth, and the death of Jeffrey Epstein.
Edward Epstein, and my residence address is 6100 Red Hook Boulevard in Virgin Islands.
Do you maintain any other residences presently?
I have vacation homes in New Mexico, Palm Beach, New York, and Paris.
Have you ever been convicted of a crime?
Yes.
What was the crime of which you were convicted?
Two counts. One, soliciting prostitution and procuring a minor for prostitution.
Did you in fact commit those acts?
I'm going to invoke my Fifth Amendment right.
How many times have you solicited a minor for prostitution?
Same answer.
How many times have you solicited a minor for prostitution in the state of Florida?
Same answer.
Have you ever solicited a minor for prostitution in the Virgin Islands?
Same answer.
That is, you are invoking your Fifth Amendment?
Yes, sir. Right. Yes, Mrs. Scrooge.
Have you ever solicited for prostitution in New York?
Same answer.
Have you ever solicited for prostitution in New Mexico?
Same answer.
Have you ever solicited for prostitution in Paris?
Same answer.
Have you ever solicited a minor for prostitution anywhere at any time?
Again, I'm going to assert my right.
We're going to go off the record. So you are terminating the deposition at this time?
You're recessing the deposition.
What college did you attend?
Cooper Union.
And did you get a degree from Cooper Union?
No, sir.
How many years were you in college?
I believe two.
What did you study?
Physics.
Well, isn't it true that you were a teacher at the Dalton School in New York after college?
It's just unheard of. It's just an unbelievable scheme to have kept going for that long of a period of time.
Do you consider yourself to be bisexual?
No.
In any event, you did develop a sexual relationship with Leslie Wexner at some point in time. Is that true?
No.
Mr. Epstein, how long have you been sexually attracted to underage minor females?
Objection. Harassing. Argumentative.
Are you kidding? No, I don't feel like I'm divulging any secrets here, right?
Move to strike.
Mr. Epstein, were you sexually abused as a minor?
Again?
Were you sexually abused as a minor?
You know, I'd like to respond to all your, if any, questions seem to be relevant. But I would like to respond to any relevant question at this time. However, my attorneys have counseled me that I cannot provide answers to the questions relevant to this lawsuit today. I must accept their advice or risk losing my Sixth Amendment right to effective representation. Accordingly, then, I assert my Fifth, Sixth, and Fourteenth Amendment right to the United States Constitution.
Would you raise your right hand, please?
Yes.
Do you solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes, I do.
Is it true, sir, that you have what's been described as an egg-shaped penis?
I had hired psychologists to do a psychological profile on Jeffrey Epstein, what type of person he was, and what would actually get under his skin. What made him tick was that he was a narcissist. He had no ability to feel empathy and saw himself as the master of puppets, so to speak.
Sir, one witness described your penis as oval-shaped and claimed when erect, it was thick towards the bottom, but was thin and small towards the head portion and called it egg-shaped. Those are not my words, I apologize. But as Mr. Critton has stated, that this is a... I'm willing to continue. I hate to call him back.
Let me go on the record.
He tries at all times to be the master of his domain and in control of his world. As soon as he feels he's out of control, it's unsettling to him.
Complaint filed by Virginia Roberts against you. Isn't it true, sir, that a friend of yours sent you 3 12-year-old females for you to sexually abuse on one of your birthdays?
Form argumentative, harassing, and irrelevant in this lawsuit.
But you're saying it's part of the lawsuit?
On one of Defendant Epstein's birthdays, a friend of Defendant Epstein sent him 3 12-year-old girls from France who spoke no English for defendant to sexually exploit and abuse. After doing so, they were sent back to France the next day. Isn't that true?
Once again, I'm gonna move to strike. Irrelevant, argumentative, harassing.
I would like to answer that question. I really would. However, today, my attorneys have told me I have to assert my Fifth Amendment, Sixth Amendment, and 14th Amendment rights of the U.S. Constitution.
You're invoking your Fifth Amendment rights to each of these questions because you know that your answers will incriminate you and you feel that it will result in you being prosecuted for these crimes. Isn't that right?
Objection, argumentative, harassing, and calls for a legal conclusion.
No, in fact, the Supreme Court recently said that the Fifth Amendment right is there to protect the innocent. So that's the way I'd like to answer that.
Are you released from jail at some time? Do you have to report back to jail on a daily basis?
Yes, I report back to jail at 8 p.m.
Every single day?
Yes, sir.
And is it 7 days a week that you're out on work release?
No, sir.
How many days a week are you out on work release?
6.
And of those 6 days, how many hours per day are you out on work release?
12.
We're back in the video record at 12:02 p.m.
Let's talk about Jane Doe 102, Virginia Roberts. Do you know Virginia Roberts?
So she's, again, who?
Virginia Roberts.
Can you spell it?
Common spelling. Virginia, like state.
Can you spell it for me, please?
Roberts.
What's the last name? How's it spelled?
R-O-B-E-R-T-S, I believe.
Isn't it true that you and Ghislaine Maxwell celebrated her 16th birthday with her and had sex with her on that day?
Form, compound, confusing, argumentative, harassing.
I'd like to answer that question, but today I'm going to have to assert my Sixth Amendment rights, my Fifth Amendment rights.
Is it true that you forced Virginia Roberts to have sex with numerous friends of yours?
Are you kidding?
If you look at Jeffrey Epstein, the way a detective would build a case, the first thing that jumps out is that his life doesn't start like a billionaire's. It starts like a kid from Brooklyn who somehow gets escorted into rooms he has no business being in. Epstein was born in 1953 in Brooklyn to a working-class Jewish family. He was bright, especially in math and science, but he never finished college. He attended classes at Cooper Union and NYU, but dropped out before ever obtaining a degree. A normal background check, that's the kind of detail that limits your options. You might end up teaching at a struggling public school or working an entry-level job. Instead, Epstein shows up at the Dalton School, one of the most elite prep schools in Manhattan, as a 20-something math and physics teacher with no diploma. He gets the job under the headmaster, Donald Barr, a former OSS intelligence officer, and the father of future Attorney General William Barr. For cops, that's the first, moment. An underqualified, uncredentialed young man somehow getting hired into a highly selective institution by someone with an intelligence background. It doesn't prove anything on its own, but it's not a normal trajectory. He doesn't last long at Dalton. By the mid-1970s, he's out, and this is where the second jump happens. A parent from Dalton helps him land an entry-level job at Bear Stearns, a major Wall Street firm. Epstein starts as a low-level assistant in the trading department and then moves into options training. Within a few years, he's a limited partner. For most people now, this would be a career highlight, but for Epstein, it's just a launching pad. In 1981, he leaves Bear Stearns under circumstances that have never fully been expanded, officially to start his own firm, though colleagues later describe rumors he was pushed out. Immediately afterward, he's running a company called the Intercontinental Asset Group, saying he helps with wealthy people recover lost or stolen money. That kind of business, moving money for rich clients in the shadows of dispute, is exactly where you expect to find people who know how to operate off the books. By 1988, Epstein incorporates J. Epstein & Company, his own money management firm. He tells Vanity Fair and others that he will only take clients worth more than $1 billion, a strangely restrictive role for a guy with no public track record. No SEC registered hedge fund, and no visible marketing operations. The documented reality, uncovered by later investigations, is that his fortune seems to depend on a very small handful of ultra-rich clients rather than a broad base of investors. The most important of those is retail billionaire Leslie Wexner, founder of Limited and Victoria's Secret. Epstein meets Wexner in the mid-1980s, becomes his financial advisor, and very quickly is given sweeping power of attorney, legally allowed to sign checks, buy and sell property, hire and fire, borrow money, and act in Wexner's name. This is an extraordinary level of trust of a man with minimal formal credentials. During this period, Epstein's visible wealth explodes. He acquires properties that once belonged to Wexner, including the now infamous townhouse at 9 East 71st Street in Manhattan, one of the largest private homes in the city. Wexner bought it in 1989. A few years later, Epstein is living there. And by the late 1990s, he takes full possession in a transaction that effectively transfers a mansion worth tens of millions of dollars into his control. He also relocates part of his operation to the U.S. Virgin Islands in St. Thomas, a tax haven, and buying his own private island, Little St. James. Later reporting shows that from 1999 to 2018, the bulk of Epstein's income came from just a few billionaire clients, especially Wexner and later Apollo, co-founder of Leon Black, who together paid him hundreds of millions in fees. So when people ask how did Jeffrey make his money, the answer is pretty clear. By embedding himself inside the financial lives of a tiny number of extremely rich people, gaining extraordinary control and charging outsized fees for it. That's not illegal by itself, but it's opaque. And it leaves huge unanswered questions about what exactly he was doing for those clients that was worth that kind of money. Meanwhile, Epstein is building something more valuable than cash, a network. His social circle expands from presidents, princes, tech founders, hedge fund billionaires, top scientists, lawyers, and academics. Flight logs show politicians, royals, and celebrities flying on his private jet. He donates to elite institutions like Harvard and MIT, funds obscure research projects, and positions himself as a kind of connector, someone who can introduce banks like JP Morgan to ultra high net worth clients and even political leaders. In internal emails that surfaced later, bank executives described him as a rainmaker who can bring in billionaires, and banks process over $1 billion in transactions for him even after he was flagged as a sex offender. From a law enforcement viewpoint, this is where the file stops looking like a routine rich guy gone bad behavior and starts to resemble infrastructure. Epstein isn't just wealthy, he is strategically connected in a way that makes him useful to banks, to billionaires, and potentially anyone who wants to have leverage over them. That's the factual backbone his conspiracy grows on. The conspiracies don't start from nothing. They grow out of these unexplained jumps to privileged treatment and missing answers. The biggest one is the intelligence asset theory. In this version, Epstein isn't just a predator, he's a tool. People believe this theory points to his odd early placement at Dalton by Donald Barr, a man with OSS intel history, to his sudden rise in elite finance without credentials at all, and to the way he keeps getting protected when any normal offender would be crushed. They highlight reports that during the Trump transition, former U.S. Attorney Alex Acosta allegedly told officials he's been told Epstein's belong to intelligence and that he should leave it alone. When he cut the 2007-2008 non-prosecution deal, they noted that Epstein later provided information to the FBI as agreed upon. According to a recently surfaced 2008 FBI memo, closing out a subfile, confirming he was at least some kind of source to them. Add in the long-running rumors and reporting that tie him via Miss Maxwell and her father Robert Maxwell to possible Mossad connection, and you get the classic honeypot narrative. Epstein is allegedly running a blackmail operation for one or more intelligence services, collecting compromising material and powerful men to be used as leverage. The why here is simple. Blackmail is one of the oldest tools of the trade, and Epstein's carefully constructed world, private jets, remote islands, camera-filled mansions, looks like a made-to-order environment for exactly that kind of work. The second major conspiracy clusters revolves around the so-called client list and the ideal of global blackmail networks. In the public mind, this usually gets reduced to memes, release the list. But behind that is a serious intuition. If Epstein was trafficking minors for decades, somebody was buying those services. Flight logs, guest books, and victim testimonies all point to a wide orbit of powerful people around him. Officially, the DOJ now says there's no secret client list, and that seized tapes mostly show illegal child pornography rather than powerful men in compromising situations. But conspiracy-minded observers look at the limited number of prosecutions, mainly Epstein himself and Miss Maxwell, and compare that to the scale of his operations and the roster of names tied to his social life. They see years of banking records, travel manifests, and digital evidence, and ask this question: is it really plausible that none of this implicates anyone else at any level, and there's nobody worth charging? Now, the theory says no, that there is or was a list, formal or informal, of compromised elites, and that exposing it would destabilize institutions in politics, finance, and the media. In that framing, the why is about system survival, protecting the the network matters more than justice for individual crimes.
Some breaking news right now. Disgraced financier Jeffrey Epstein has taken his own life while he was behind bars here in New York City. Epstein was facing sex trafficking charges. NBC News investigative correspondent Tom Winter now has the very latest. Tom, what more do we know?
Peter, what we know now is that at 6:39 this morning, the fire department and EMS here in New York City got a phone call from MCC, which is a federal detention facility here in Manhattan in New York City, where Jeffrey Epstein was being held awaiting trial. They took him to New York's downtown hospital. He was in cardiac arrest, and he was pronounced there. What we know from officials that have been briefed on what happened, it appeared that he had hung himself in his cell or wherever he was being held within MCC, and he was found by prison officials this morning, and that's when they reached out and they called EMS in unsuccessful attempts to revive him. So that happened early this morning, and right now what we're trying to do is figure out if he was still on suicide watch, because there was an incident that occurred several weeks ago where he injured himself. It wasn't quite clear if that was an attempt on his life, an attempt to perhaps stage an attack.
The third major conspiracy is the one everybody has heard in the meme form. Epstein didn't kill himself. Underneath the joke is a serious cluster of questions about his death. In August of 2019, the Metropolitan Correctional Center in New York, officially New York City, medical examiner ruled it a suicide by hanging, and subsequent DOJ and FBI reviews have reaffirmed that conclusion. But the list of procedural failures that night is long. Epstein had been taken off suicide watch, was left without a cellmate. Guards missed required checks and then falsified logs to suggest they had done them, and cameras near his cell had technical issues. The DOJ Inspector General later documented numerous and serious failures in staffing, supervision, and equipment that created the opportunity for Epstein's death. On top of that, the autopsy found multiple neck fractures, including a broken bone in the neck. Injuries that one prominent forensics pathologist, Dr. Michael Baden, said were extremely unusual in suicidal hangings and more consistent with homicidal strangulation. Other experts dispute the interpretation and say such fractures can occur in older individuals who hang themselves. But the disagreement itself feeds doubt. Then when the DOJ finally released the jail video years later, metadata analysis showed the raw footage had been processed and stitched together with at least 1 minute gap. Again, something officials said was benign, but which only deepened suspicion. For people inclined towards conspiracy, the why here is straightforward. If Epstein could name names, then leaving him alive was too dangerous for too many people. A messy suicide in a broken jail is easier to manage than a live defendant in open court. A fourth, broader conspiracy treats Epstein as just one node in a larger pattern of elite criminal impunity. A fourth, broader conspiracy treats Epstein as just one node in a larger pattern. In this telling, he isn't a one-off monster. He's Exhibit A. Supporters of this view point to the 2008 non-prosecution agreement Acosta's office cut, which allowed Epstein to plead to minimal state charges, serve about 13 months in a lenient work release setup, and avoid federal indictment altogether, all while victims were kept in the dark. They note how J.P. Morgan and other institutions kept him as a client and processed more than $1 billion in transactions even after he was a registered sex offender. They look at the fact that after his 2019 arrest and death, only one close associate, Maxwell, has been brought to trial, while the many powerful people in his orbit have mostly carried on. Put all that together, and the conspiracy isn't just about espionage or murder. It's about a system that quietly decides which criminals are too connected to fail. The why here is about continuity of power. If you start tugging too hard on the Epstein thread, you might unravel confidence in the entire institutions, so the systems opts for a controlled burn instead of a full fire.
We received substantial evidence that he was involved in trafficking young women and children to the Virgin Islands for a very long period of time through our airport, through his private jet. He would then transport them over to Little St. James, where he has his complex, which is his official residence. These young girls and women were subject to sexual assault, sexual exploitation through coercion, false imprisonment, where the passports at some points were taken away. The actions were reprehensible, and it was quite a number of women, and we found through our investigation that at least up to 2018 that continued.
So what your investigation is showing is the broad scope of Jeffrey Epstein's nefarious activities, that it just kept going.
Based on the evidence that we found thus far. Let me make something very clear. Jeffrey Epstein was very good at protecting himself and being secret. The secrecy was, he was very good at that. And because of his wealth, his power, he was able to do that and secure that. He owns a private island that's over a mile away from St. Thomas. the main island, and it's out there and isolated. He purchases that. Then he owns the jet that flew in to the airport. It's under a name of one of the front companies that actually has been named in our complaint, but it's him. He's the member of that LLC. And he owns the helicopter and boats that transported him and the women and children to the island. It's him orchestrating all of that. Yes, there may have been baggage handlers. There may have been other persons who looked and saw him and other females with young girls. It's important that we focus on how Jeffrey Epstein was able to create such an elaborate scheme, doing it in such secrecy. And he had the money and power to create the secrecy so that not just local authorities, but we have federal authorities here too. In looking at that, you have to really get a good understanding of how he was able to protect and isolate himself. Once you get on that island, how do you get off? It's not like a person who's on the island can just say, okay, I'm gonna swim to St. Thomas. They can't do that. It's not like a person who's there and needs help that they can sneak away and run outside and flag down a vehicle or flag down a police car or run to the nearest police station like they might be able to do on St. Thomas. The island is isolated. So that kind of isolation is really how you have to look at when you start to think, how could this have happened for so long?
I think the picture you paint is a terrifying one of isolation, but also abuse of power. And I just wonder why the people who worked for Jeffrey Epstein weren't terrified for the girls going over there. They knew how isolated that island was. They knew the ages of those girls. They saw powerful men there. Why weren't they terrified? Why didn't they become whistleblowers?
One thing I do know is that there are the non-disclosure agreements that Jeffrey Epstein had all of the employees, if not most of them, had to agree not to disclose any information to law enforcement or anyone else regarding what goes on that island. Even after Jeffrey Epstein's death, those non-disclosure agreements are still in place and still enforced by the estate. So this was just one of the ways that you can pretty much intimidate or silence people. But in addition to that, when you see someone connected with powerful people who may visit the island or he may be involved with, whether it doesn't have to be here, it could be anywhere in the world. And it's known that these powerful people are his friend and associates. That alone is intimidating to the ordinary citizen who's sitting there and watching this and say, ooh, that does not look good. But could you imagine the reluctance of that person to say, I'm going to come forward, I'm going to tell on that person who's friends with all these powerful people? So that alone, the way that he surrounded himself with these powerful people, that was an example of the kind of intimidation that would cause people to be silent about what they may see or suspect. As far as the Virgin Islands is concerned, I need to make sure that the Virgin Islands is not and is not perceived as a haven for this kind of sexual exploitation, human trafficking, and sexual and child abuse. We have to make that clear. It is very important that we enforce our laws against human trafficking, against child abuse, against sexual exploitation of women. It is important that we do that because if I don't do it as the Attorney General, the top law enforcement person, if we do not do it in the Virgin Islands, then those types of crimes will continue to flourish.
If I'm being completely honest, when I look at the Epstein story the way a cop looks at a case file, I don't see a random suicide or a Hollywood-style assassination. I see a man who was allowed to die in a cage that was perfectly engineered through neglect or a tent to make sure no one stopped him. You've got a high-value inmate who knows the worst secrets of the world's most powerful people, a guy who once walked away with a sweetheart deal that no ordinary offender could ever dream of. And when he finally lands back in federal custody, and suddenly the Bureau of Prisons forgets how to do the one thing it exists to do, keep a prisoner safe long enough to face a trial. That's not just bad luck. That's a system that, at minimum, stopped caring about whether he lived or died at the exact moment. His testimony would have been most dangerous. Do I think he was capable of killing himself? Absolutely. He was cornered, aging, and smart enough to read the writing on the wall. This wasn't 2008. There were no plea deals, no work releases, no going back to the island. So yeah, suicide is plausible here. But look at the environment around that decision. He's taken off suicide watch. He's left left without a cellmate. The guards don't do their rounds. The logs are faked. The cameras don't give you the clean view. And when the autopsy hits, the injuries are controversial enough that experts are still arguing about them years later. Maybe no one walked into the cell and strangled him, but it sure looks like the system opened every door you need to have open if you wanted a desperate man to take the one exit that protects everybody but the victims. Then there's the list. And this is where the story stops being about one dead man and starts being about the ecosystem around him. There isn't one neat laminated client list, the government admits to. What there is an overlapping circle of association. You got flight logs, people who flew on his planes, stayed at his properties, moved through his orbit. You got the social web, the dinners, the fundraisers, the donations to universities and to labs, the meetings with tech founders, CEOs, royals, former presidents. You got the financial ties, billionaires who let him run their money, banks that kept him as a client even after he was a convicted sex offender, institutions that kept cashing his checks because he opened doors they wanted open. And then there's the smallest, darkest circle, the alleged co-conspirators and enablers, the recruiters, the fixers, the schedulers, the people who helped make the abuse machine run while pretending they were just part of the furniture. So when people say the list, what they're really talking about is that whole spectrum, from clueless elites who thought he was just a rich connector, all the way up to predators and power brokers who may have had every reason to be terrified of him talking under oath. My best guess, the real list that matters isn't just who flew on the plane. It's who was actually compromised. And with that, it's probably a mix of people who were stupid, people who were selfish, and people who are just downright evil. And the reason we've never seen that list in full is because releasing it would set off political, financial, and cultural explosions nobody in power is willing to risk. So here's where I land. Epstein was a predator, but he was also just a node, a junction point where money, sex, leverage, and power all met. His fortune wasn't some genius hedge fund story. It was built on a tiny circle of ultra-wealthy clients and institutions that found him useful and didn't ask too many questions. His contact book, his flight logs, his archives, whatever they actually contain are dangerous, not because they prove one cartoon villain controls the world, but because they show how many supposedly separate worlds quietly overlap: politics, finance, royalty, science, media. And when the man finally became a liability instead of an asset, the system didn't rush to protect his life. It sleepwalked just long enough for a problem to disappear. Whether you're believed he was murdered, allowed to die, or vanished and replaced, the message is the same. The people who needed him silenced got what they needed. The victims didn't. The public didn't. Justice didn't. And that's why his story won't die, because at some level, everyone can feel what the official narrative can't say out loud. Epstein's death wasn't just the end of a man. It was a signal that there are several levels of power in this world that would rather break their own roles than let the truth walk into a courtroom and start talking. If tonight's episode hit something in your gut, don't leave it here. Share this with someone who thinks that this was just another suicide in a bad jail. Leave a review, hit follow, and help push the Zero Signal further into the feeds they don't want you scrolling. And if you've seen this kind of machinery up close, if you worn a badge, worked the case, pushed intel, or just brushed up against something you weren't supposed to see, I want to hear from you. You can reach out safely through our booking form in the show notes. Until next time, stay sharp, stay skeptical, and remember, the story they tell you is never the whole report. This is Zero Signal. Logging off.